overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Yeah, to know yourself is love. That's pretty daunting, isn't it? You know, it says in the Gospel of Thomas, you can kill the Father and you can kill the Son, and that's perfectly fine. But if you kill the Holy Spirit, you shall die. Well, the Holy Spirit is the loving. It's the loving that we all are. You know, we have concepts of a heavenly Father. And if you don't have the right kind, they'll say that you don't belong in our tribe. But let me tell you, this is a tribe that includes all. Trey and I have a bumper sticker on our car. We saw it when we were in Sewanee, Tennessee, and it said, celebrate diversity. And it has a little dachshund, and it has a German shepherd, and it has a Great Dane, and it has a Chihuahua. And what if we could celebrate all the world's religions? You know, that's what these yantras, these are symbols of the world religions. God doesn't have a religion. I just want you all to know that. So if you don't fit into a specific tribe, you've come home. You've come home, because it's about finding the truth within your own heart. The truth awakens within each one of us. And it's funny, this month, I love to create a theme for the months, and this month it's called Glimpsing the Divine. And I read the little program that I wrote months ago, because I do these way in advance. And, you know, the Christian Bible says, behold, I make all things new. So our job is to behold that which this creative force creates, and it's always creating out of itself. It says in the book of Revelations, and there will be a new heaven and a new earth, and behold, the voice within will declare, I make all things new. So the new heaven is a new consciousness, and the new earth is a new manifestation. And so what would this world look like if love were leading the way? Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this teaching, and it's very interesting, at the Circle of Love gathering, the new president of the organization was there. And I thought she was coming to check up on me and this Circle of Love event that they're doing in these remote places to see what was going on. And I was a little trepidatious about meeting her. And they're looking for a new spiritual leader for these Centers for Spiritual Living. And she asked if I would throw my hat in the ring to be the spiritual leader for all them. I said, are you kidding me? I thought I was the black sheep here in Alabama hiding out. She says, no, no, David. She said, you're so loved by the organization, and they need this frequency of love. I said, well, that's such good news for me. And I said, I will serve, but I'll serve in the way that I can serve and not in the way that you want. I've learned you offer them what you have and not what they want, and then they can take advantage of that beautiful heart space. But to know that we're all creating it together here is really powerful. You know, it just takes one or two. When two or more are gathered with an intention to serve the love will serve itself by means of us. So I'm talking about glimpsing, and the reason I use the word glimpsing is because in this wonderful class we're teaching, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness, the author talks about shifting our belief system, our operating system, from the head into the heart. And it's so funny because my Zen calendar always seems to go right along with the Sunday talk, and yesterday it was Ram Dass. Ram Dass said, I couldn't get to my spiritual heart through my rational mind. My mind had to stop in order for my heart to open. I couldn't get to my spiritual heart through my rational mind, because that would be deliberate mindfulness. I think I'm the doer. You know, Ajahn Shanti says, you know what true meditation is? It's getting rid of the one who thinks he's a meditator. In other words, we are not the doer. There is this spiritual heart that includes all of us. And sometimes they say all swimming in the ocean of lava of love ends in drowning. a dear friend was talking about being in lava and morphing as his ego was transforming. Well, that's kind of what happened to me here at the center. Judy remembers it, so does Reva. When I discovered that I was love, and that's when Rumi started coming into my life, I realized that I was this love, and it was trying to make its way in through this vehicle, and several people left the church. I think Judy's mother was one of them. They were uncomfortable with this love when this love started to annihilate the egoic identification, the rational mind. Yes, we still have a very rational mind, but now it's in service to something that is greater. It's in service to the love. So then you look at science of mind in a whole different way. He says, let love lead the way, and then the law makes the way possible. So what would your life look like if love were leading the way? It's a wonderful question. If you were making your choices from your heart instead of from your head. You know, your head will want you to do the right thing, do the practical things, stay safe and secure, and do all the things that you think you should. But of course, we don't should on ourselves here at the center. Should do. Whereas the heart would say, go be a dancer. Go, like Rabbit said, I'm going to leave my accounting job and I'm going to travel the country and I'm going to discover what this jubilant and beholden soul is. And then you hear that line when you were a little kid, what does it profit man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? So could the soul be the priority? So that's what this young gentleman is talking about. His name is Locke Kelly, and he was kind of an engineer type. Anybody engineer type? Kind of very scientific. So being that he was an overly zealous scientific spiritual person, he went to Nepal to study with the great teachers who understood the nature of meditation, only to realize that something awoke within him, and he was told to go back to the Western world and teach it in a very simple way. Now, he is kind of convoluted in his writing. Engineers love this book because it is very cerebral. I know Dave looks at me, he grimaces because he wasn't a true engineer. You were more of a psychologist. So, yes. However, it's been very helpful for me. Because he talks about a shift from the content of mind to the context of mind. So what is the context? The context is the space in which all thought arises. And he says, we are the context. He uses the metaphor, the thoughts are like clouds in the sky, and we are so concerned about what thought patterns you have. But when you realize, and you fall out of the cloud, and you realize, oh my God, I'm the sky. I'm that field of awareness. I am that awakened love. And then the thoughts, they still arise, but we can return to this awareness more easily. Learn to return, he says, and train to remain. Learn to return to the open-hearted awareness, and then train yourself to remain there. So when the annoying thoughts arise, they should be doing this. At the Circle of Love, there was a lot of talk at the very beginning about the darkness that's on our planet right now. Anybody notice watching the news? There is a lot of shadow arising on our planet. And so this minister from Dothan, Alabama, she came up to me, Glenda Davis, and she said, David, how can we be with this shadow that's so dark at this time on our planet? And I said, you know, Glenda, I don't have the answer. But I do know that when you start meeting the darkness first within yourself, then you can meet it out there in the world. And so what if the darkness is necessary for the light to emerge? Just asking that question. It's not about getting rid of the darkness, but about bringing the darkness into that field of love and create a holding space for it. So let me give you a taste of what Locke Kelly says around what a glimpse is. He says, we glimpse the divine. This morning I was looking at Bert lying in his chair, and I was thinking, you know, baby Speck died a year and a half ago. Was it 2 years ago? I don't know. Anyway, I didn't think he was going to go on. And this morning, as I'm looking at him in the chair, I'm seeing Jody Rutenberg come running in my living room after church one Sunday, because Bert wasn't eating. He wasn't getting out of the chair. Teresa said he's confused. She walks in there as his original mother, because I adopted him through her rescue group. She scoops this 80-pound dog up in her arms, and she takes him outside, and she says, pee, Bert, pee. And she brought him back to life. I swear to God, that was glimpsing the divine. Because she wasn't going to have any of her kids die of depression because the love of his life made her transition. And I've watched him evolve. So that was a glimpse of the divine. He says, a glimpse is a type of shifting. It's a letting go. It's a dropping into. It's a stopping to allow a natural clarity and a connectedness to emerge. One of the beautiful things about moving into the awakened home, you realize that everything is you, that you're not separate even from a sugar baby. I mean, actually, Paul was telling me when he remembers the date of all his pets. He was going down the list. He remembers when they made their transition. And then the last one was the parakeet. He had a little parakeet. I don't know when he had her, but he said she would land on his cereal bowl and she'd be eating the cereal with him, and then she'd look up at him and, "What's yours is mine," and he would let her eat the cereal. See, that's what an open heart would do. It would have a connection even with the smallest of things. I mean, I actually saw two little birds making love at a stoplight, and it was almost pleasurable waiting for the red light to change because they were having a gay old time up there with that little one. It's red, you know, it's a red light district. Glimpses. Glimpses are the initial effortless effort of opening, of surrendering, of resting, or turning awareness around to find an open mind and an open heart. Wow. So you start off by witnessing. Is my mind open? Am I teachable? Do I have a beginner's mind? Or do I have all the answers? Because if you have all the answers, you're not ready for truth. Because you can not know truth. Bill Savoy was talking about, it's not about getting more knowledge. If anything, true learning is about unlearning. So he says, they are micro meditations, these glimpses, or they're rest stops. They're aha moments. Have a good day at work. I'm going to miss you, sweetheart. Oh, she's coming back. She comes in here before she goes to work. Where we refresh or reboot our whole body-mind system. Little rest stops. I used to call them bliss stops. You know, Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss. A bliss stop, to get up in the morning and to have that connection to that awake awareness, that open-hearted thing. That's why animals are so important. Trey gets up at 5 in the morning, and I have Bert lying on my left side and Humphrey lying on my right. And you know, there's something blissful about being half awake and having two dogs snoring on either side of you. It's just a heavenly experience. That's how I start my day, in the bliss of dog love. Used to have a little pussycat between my legs, but she's in heaven with baby Speck. A glimpse is not an insight from a conceptual mind. Rather, it is a direct experience of the essential peace that we are, of the essential love that we are, and the deepest wisdom that has always been there. It is a paradigm shift, an identity shift, a shift of consciousness to a new view and a new you that really feels true. A new you. You're no longer the egoic mind struggling with the many masks that you play. You know, I taught a class here years ago, Joseph Campbell, The Power of Myth. And he talks about these lives that we live are really dream-like lives. They're myths. And so at the end of the class, I asked the students to write a myth. And so the myth came through them. And the myth that came through me was really interesting. I was a little boy, and as I grew up as a little boy, I was given all these masks to wear. And I had a little backpack, and Rabbit will understand this, and in that backpack, I had all the masks. And so I would pull the mask on, the perfect son, the perfect this, the accountant. I was terrible at accounting, by the way. I got fired from my first job. I couldn't do the number thing. And then in the myth, I kept trying to put the masks on, but the masks fell off. I couldn't wear the masks anymore. And there comes a time when you cannot be this false identity anymore. You have to be the love itself. You have to be this. So he's saying that they'll begin to fall away. He said it's a paradigm shift, an identity shift, a shift of consciousness to a new view, a new way of looking at life, and a new you that feels true. The Tibetan Buddhists, glimpsing, they called it flashing an awakened heart mind. Is that word flashing? I just had cataract surgery, so some words are kind of odd. Yeah, an awakened heart mind. And then he gives all the different effects afterwards. He says, you'll feel a sense of relief because your mind's in control. You're not trying to control things, Laura, anymore. The control freak is gone. Wow, such a relief. You feel so light because you're not in charge. Your mind is wide open and without an agenda. You're not trying to figure out tomorrow. You're in the I don't know place. And there's a knowing in the I don't know place. What are you going to do with the rest of your life? I don't know. And there's such liberation in that. You don't have to know. You can know what you don't want to do. And you know, Dr. Holmes in The Science of Mind, he says, first you have to know what it isn't before you know what it is. Well, I know that God is not a Christian God or a Jewish God or a Muslim God. In fact, I don't even think God exists. Wow. They were asking me to be in the Masonic Lodge, and I said, they don't want a gay guy in the Masonic Lodge. Oh, yes, David. The only requirement for the Masons is that you believe in God. And I said, well, there you have it. I don't believe in God. They were just shocked that I would say such a thing. Because all belief comes from the mind. What if there's a direct knowing that there is a presence and a power that is everything, and we are that. Now, is that a belief? I don't think so. That's an organic, deep knowing that's already there. And animals have it, trees have it, and I hope someday that I have it to that degree. When I went to Circle of Love Gathering, I was packing my bags, and on the bureau, rock fell off the bureau. And Rock was my friend that I got when I was in Colorado, when I discovered the exiled parts of me that I had buried so many years ago. And Rock said, I want to go with you to the Circle of Love. And so I took Rock with me. And every time Rock is there, my little boy is there, the one that I exiled 65 years ago. And when he came up in Colorado, he said, you left me 65 years ago back then. Don't leave me again. You know, don't put on the mask of Mr. Got All the Answers. He's the one that needed to be. And so he was there at Circle of Love in his vulnerability, and I let him be there because he's the one that could glimpse the divine. He was the little kid that would merge with flowers and hold on to trees, and he would have this connection with all of life. Why would I get rid of him, you know? And so at any age, there's the possibility to integrate the all of us. So, yeah, he says, your mind will be wide open, and it doesn't have an agenda. Your thoughts are less prominent. They've moved into the background. You know, he says, where thoughts normally are in the foreground, where you're thinking about all the things I've got to do and all the beliefs I have, after a while, they're kind of in the background, and there's this spacious field of love that is really what you are. Is that strange to operate from that place? Where you can literally, you've heard me say I drive with Spa on the radio because it's just beautiful lilting music. And then every now and then she'll say, Spa for the quiet mind. And I'm smiling and because I don't want that foreground. I don't want talk radio. I want Spa for the quiet mind. And then there's this heartfelt guidance system that takes you down paths that you don't follow normally. You know, you see a dog on the side of the road and you stop because you're present enough to see that it needs to be taken home. He says, you're free of worry and fear and judgment. It's not that you're free of it. They're just less prevalent. It still arises. You're able to effortlessly focus on something without concentrating because you're not distracted by the million little voices in your head. They're the sub-personalities that we all have, but they're not running the show. They're not in control anymore. He says, your center has moved from your head into your heart. He talks about, in this whole class, about living from heart-centered awareness. And so he has this little three-way thing of getting there. He says, first, and it's just like spiritual mind treatment for all you hardcore religious scientists, the very first step of spiritual mind treatment is a recognition. You recognize that there is this power in the universe. There is this field of awareness. Same thing in this open-hearted awareness. You're aware of a local awareness that precedes thought. You know, he says, unhook from thought, it's there in your throat. There's awareness in your throat. Let it move down into your belly. There's awareness in your belly. Maybe you're hungry. You haven't had breakfast. There's awareness in your hips. Wow. But do they think where they're moving? No. How they're moving? No. But there's awareness there. There's awareness in your knees and in your feet. Awareness is, so you become aware of awareness. That's the first step. And he said, and he gives little I words. It's invisible, this awareness. It's innocent. It's intimate. It's intelligent. It's ineffable. That means it can't be described. It's innate. It's inherent. It's intuitive. All these aspects of this awareness. So first is recognition of it. Then the second is unification in spiritual mind treatment, or you realize you're aware as this intelligence. It's operating. It's not thought anymore. There is this, and he says that's where the C words come in. There's a curiosity. You know, I love that we have some scientists in our class. I love science because science invites you to question. You know, if energy cannot be created or destroyed, it can only change form. Well, then we as beings of energy, would we ever really die? Do we just shift and change form? Ah, there's a scientific idea to play with. So what if when we become aware as this awareness, it's curious, it's creative, it's calm, it's clear, all the C words, it's connected because we're all united in this. So we connect in this energy. You know, that's one thing I love about Circle of Love. We sit in a circle and we realize there's only one there, and it's meeting in a field of love. And then what would it look like if we sang in that field and we did art in that field and we had dialogue in that field and we went on zip lines? Some of my courageous students went on the zip line the last day. I have a fear of heights, so I had to vicariously live through their consciousness. And Kim so beautifully described the zip line, and Adam did too. He said, you've got to be crazy when you're standing on this thing. And he said, self-preservation just naturally flows through you because you're stepping like off a cliff. But then instantly it takes you and you're, and you feel zip, zippity-doo-dah, because you're... But Kim really touched into the fear thing. She said, you have to watch these slats. And if you've got little legs like I do, you have to step across a crevasse onto a thing, and there's a drop-off, and then you have to step to another thing. And as she was crossing this bridge of fear, of terror, she all she could think was, don't follow me, Adam. You're big, and you'll shake the bridge. And I could so relate to her. But that's true. I mean, you don't want somebody who's going to wiggle the bridge while you're stepping over a crevasse of fear. And yet when you move through that fear, there's a shift that takes place because you've conquered, not necessarily conquered, but you've met it. So the third phase, he says, is you awaken to this awake awareness. Then you awaken as this awake awareness. And then the final one is your life starts coming from it. Your thoughts are loving thoughts. And he uses the P word there. You're living in presence. You're living in possibility. You're living in potential. You're living in purpose. Wow. So what would a life look like that the purpose is fueled by the open-hearted awareness? Wouldn't it want to love one another? Wouldn't it want to serve the one and the many? You know, we were talking about that wonderful movie, Harriet, about Harriet Tubman. And Trey and I saw it last week. And she was a slave in Maryland, and she ran away from her master and went to the north. But then she's got the bodhisattva heart. She said, it's not about me being free. I can't be free until I set everybody else free. So she kept coming back to liberate her people. And there were so many inspiring moments when she's standing on a bridge and she can't swim, and all the slave masters are coming together with the dogs. And she said, I'd rather die than give up my freedom. And so she fell off the bridge. You talk about moving through fear, and the water carried her to freedom. So what if those things inspire us to have a purpose, to be for something and against nothing? And the heart definitely is for something, you know, for freedom, for inclusivity, for spirituality that is not bound by doctrine and dogma. You know, I remember that I said, I'll do anything but do what I do here, because I thought religion was the opiate of the people. And yet I had, because of this teaching, and because of the evolution of consciousness, I found a spirituality that is so intimate, that is always working. It never stops. It's always calling us to a higher order of being. So Locke Kelly goes on to say what the goal of all of this, he says, is to live a fully intimate human life. The immediate goal of this is to transition into a new, upgraded operating system, which is embodied and open-hearted and has greater capacity to be with our full human experience. Dr. Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind says you can have as much good as you can take in life. He says, but you can only take what you can embody. So he's saying the same essential thing. We have to embody the open heart. It can't be a concept. Is your heart open? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. No, it has to be the operating system from which we live. And when the heart is open, then the love is leading the way. And it oftentimes will take you into places, a long and winding road you don't know. It'll take you where your soul needs to be. It always does. He goes on to say, effortless mindfulness is to transition into this new upgraded operating system and has a greater capacity to be with our full human experience. I'm feeling a deep sense that all is well, that who I am is always okay, even when I'm not okay. And it's not that there are no difficulties and pain, but now I feel there is a loving support within myself that gives me this new motivation to go on with life. I've got this ground of being that's the foundation of what I am, which is love itself, which can definitely lead the way in our relationships with other people. Even when they don't understand us, I'm not in control. I defer to that love that's in control. Huh. And then it shows us the way. So I'm glimpsing all the way home. That's the title of the talk. And home is our destiny. Home is where we're all seeking. You know, when we went to the Circle of Love retreat, it wasn't really a retreat from the world. It was a going home to what we are. the home that's always been there, the home that we have to discover for ourselves. You know, I love to quote The Wizard of Oz, how at the end of Dorothy's searching for her good, at the very end, of course, it doesn't happen, and Glenda appears as that beautiful question that we get to live in, and she asks, what did you learn, Dorothy? And she learned that never to look any further than my own backyard, because if it isn't there, I never lost it to begin with. In other words, the love is already there. The thing that you've been looking for, you've been looking with. It's right there within yourself, and that's, she said, is that it? And Glenda said, that's it. Why didn't you tell me?
Because you wouldn't have believed me if I told you. You have to make the great discovery for yourself. Yes, you have to discover that you are the love. I can't tell you that because you won't hear it until you discover it right there within your own being.
So then you have the scarecrow way of finding, you think it's going to happen through your brain. And you're going to read every book and study every text. Is that going to get you there? And then if you're the Tin Man, you think you have to have a heart because you don't have a heart. But ultimately, the heart was there all along. You know, and if you're the Cowardly Lion, you think you have to find the courage. But the courage to stand up for yourself and for a little dog, and it's there all along. Everyone, the thing they were looking for, they were looking with. So what is that, another myth, another metaphor for all of our journey to this truth of our being that's waiting for us? So I was thinking of the glimpse at Circle of Love. This woman, the last morning, she did a Osho Tantric meditation. And I guess you can find it online. How many of you did it with me? You and I. So she put on this music, and she just, it was like this drumming. And she said, move your body. And I was having a severe pain in my body. And so I moved into that spacious awareness. First you have a local awareness, then it gets to the space. The spacious awareness was shaking in my body, and it was moving to the very places that I was having difficult in my thoracic vertebra, and then in my shoulder, and then in my hips, and just that movement. I realized this awareness is intelligent. It was literally establishing my body in wholeness. Then she said it, the next section came in, and now allow yourself to move. You know, we did some movement meditation in our Wednesday day class, and half the class just sat in their seats. The other class got up and moved. And it's interesting, Virginia Burroughs, a lady in her 80s, is the one that put the music on. And the young people are the ones that sat down and didn't move. And so when I did the closing meditation, I said, okay, your eyes are closed. Nobody's watching you. Let the body move. The body knows how to move. It's not a thought process. It's an inherent process. It doesn't think, is this right? Is this wrong? Are people looking at me? No, it knows what needs to move when it needs to move so that it can heal what it needs to heal. That's a glimpse. That's a glimpse, and they happen all the time. So that tantric Osho meditation was a glimpse for me. Glory G took us down to the water where Adam lost D. He buried D in the water, and now he's Adam. And then she had us go to a tree and experience the energy of the tree and let the tree communicate. And without exception, everyone had a direct experience with tree. We're not separate. We're all connected. A glimpse of the divine. Then we did some ecstatic dancing on Saturday night. I'm too old for ecstatic dancing. And yet, when beautiful Jessie Powers was lying and rolling around on the floor with her body moving, I'm on the floor, and we tied ourselves into a twisted knot of love because the ecstatic dance was doing both of us. What if that's the possibility for all of us? And then we did a creative little process. We did mandala boxes. And I got to see my resistance to the creative process. For me, when you do a mandala, you put a paper plate, you draw a circle, and you have fun. This was done from an engineering perspective. You had a little compass, you had a measurer, and everything was measured 5 3/4 inches. And if it was off, it wouldn't fit in the box. And of course, none of my measurements fit in the box. And all the engineers were reveling in their detail, in their organization. Michael Reed did 2 boxes because he is so left brain, front and back and inside and out. I could barely get one going. And then when the glue gun started and the glitter, my fingers were all stuck together. And I'm thinking, I got to have fun. So I shifted out of Mr. Perfection, and I went into Mr. Playful. And there was a glimpse. Once I got out of him, I started having fun. And I drew Baby Speck in my mandala. And then I drew Smudgies in the mandala. And then I put Trey in the mandala. And then I put the big tree that we cut down, Ethel, in the mandala. Ethel had to be reduced because she was hollow inside. So I have a birthday coming up. So Trey went. and got me a very large pig to sit on her stump. And we call her Bethel, baby Ethel. And so now Bethel is sitting on Ethel, and I'm a happy guy. Because every time I look at Bethel, I see Ethel, and there's a glimpsing of the divine, because Ethel never really left us. You know, that's the big thing. I was talking to Michael, you know, about my favorite subject is death in a strange sort of way. Maybe it's because I touched it when I had the heart attack. And I didn't realize you guys had the heart attack too. And last Wednesday night's satsang, a woman was just sobbing because she said, I can't imagine life without you on the planet. And then Glory G walked me over to her and she just sobbed in my arms. And I apologize if it was hard on you, because it was really the best thing that ever happened to me. And I have a little bit of that survivor grief. Why did I live when so many who have the Widowmaker don't make it? But apparently I wasn't my time, and it changed me forever. And when I lost my two animals last year, I was talking to Michael. I see them everywhere. Am I losing my mind? Every time we drive somewhere, I see baby Speck running, and I see her peeing, and I see her going to her little discreet places where she would chase the muskrats. And I guess that's... In this wonderful book, he talks about you move out of chronological time and you move into what they call eternal time. And in eternal time, the past and the future exist in eternal time. So you can be walking around your home, and there's photographs of my husband and me for 45 years. There's a little one for Almond and Vineyards where we were in the early 70s when he had long, curly hair and he was a street artist. And then there's the one up there in Vancouver. And so as I walk around the house, it's like a tribute to... Then there's our dog photographs, all the dogs that are no longer, and the cats. And so, yes, the past is there, but then I'll walk into the garden and I can see the future spring blossoms. I know where the crocuses are going to come up and where the hyacinths are going to be blooming, and the camellias are filled with their big buds. There's pink ones and red ones and white ones, and it's past, present, and future all existing simultaneously, because this awareness isn't bound by now or by here and now. It's including everything. We did a blessing at the end of the Circle of Love. We now end it with a blessing, because Locke Kelly talks about first this presence awakens and we realize that we're that. Then it goes deeper into a deepening awakening. You know, all the exile parts of ourself come up. He talks about the ego in here, and he says the ego has three parts. There's the manager, the one who's in control. You all have healthy managers in your ego. Then he says there's the exiled parts of us, the disowned parts, that somehow get subjectified and buried, and they will come up to be met. And then he talks about the firefighter, the part of you that when there is a crisis steps into action. And he said these are the operating system of an egoic mind. But he said when presence awakens, then it awakens within, and you integrate all those parts of you, and then it awakens without into some kind of purpose, some kind of giving back, some kind of interconnectedness. And our challenge, our opportunity, and our responsibility is to figure that out in this lifetime. I loved little Maddie. Paula Smith's daughter was there, and she was just so unconditionally loving. It's as if my little baby was there, and she was throwing herself at everybody, throwing and hugging everybody. It was just unconditional love on steroids. And what a beautiful thing for a mother-daughter to come to this event. So lastly, since many of you didn't come to the event, Natalia Zuckerman was there. She's a lovely lady from New York City, and she paints pictures of animals, and she captures their soul. That's her little greeting card, and she loves her dog. Her dog looks like baby Speck. She has it on her water bottle. She said, I don't know what I'll do when that dog leaves. I said, oh, let's not go there. But anyway, she wrote a blessing that is really quite beautiful. And in it, she describes this waking up, waking in, and waking out. And I invite you to take this for yourself. She completed it at the Circle of Love because she got from me one simple piece, and that it's to move from a healing space into a holding space. You know, it's interesting. Last Saturday at the Circle of Love, they were paying tribute to my teacher, Dr. Kennedy Schultz, 40 years of ministry, and all his students, they called him Kennedy's pups, were all going to be there. I couldn't be there because I was at the Circle of Love gathering. And several of us are out in the field because of him. That day, that Saturday morning at 11:10, his partner of like 30 years made his transition. So all I could think of was the two of them are together at this beautiful moment when they're celebrating 40 years of his ministry. See, you begin to see things differently when the heart opens. It's not a bad thing, it's a thing. And they're together now. How sweet is that? So here's her poem. She says, We are made of atoms, for all you scientists out there, scintillating. We were made to gather in celebration while singing with voices, blending and blurring, time and religion, thought and decision. For here is our temple, and here is our church. Put your hand on your heart. I invite you to do that. Let the oxytocin flow. Put your hand on your heart and begin the most magnificent search. Allow yourself to be surrounded by the music of your quiet mind becoming silently grounded. Allow yourself to be surrounded by the music of your quiet mind becoming silently grounded. That is waking up. Now waking in. Trust your intuition. It's been telling you all along. You are the wisdom. You are that strong. It is your right to be joyful and creative. It is our nature to be part of a collective of bold love and deep mystery. To awaken each day and each night to sleep, knowing that you are no more and no less than the perfect you in all your imperfect best. Now we're wakening out. Get ready to be called. Get ready to be called. Allow yourself to be held. Allow yourself to be held by the oneness of it all. May we rise up to a more complete love, one that creates together. And may we remember that it is always here, everywhere, and forever. So be a light worker right here on this planet Earth and show someone today the beauty of their own worth. Dream the biggest dream and then dream even bigger. Take giant bold sips from your own potent elixir, aiming always for our highest evolution, for the glorious revolution of the body and mind, to become ever more awake and alive, with no fear, my brothers and sisters, with no need to question or to resist her. Turn away from habit, locate your magic. Stop thinking you're not enough, without that or without this. Try saying something new, and just for practice, tell your heart to invade your mind. Just for practice, tell your heart to invade your mind, to sing and align with all that is tender and gentle and kind. Try saying something new. Let it be your practice to step into your own beautiful uniqueness. Try saying something new. Let this be your practice to know that you are ready, to know deeply that you are protected. For here is our temple, here is our church. So put your hand on your heart and begin this most magnificent search, allowing yourself to be surrounded by the music of your quiet mind and the flowering of your open heart, silently astounded. So with our hand on our heart, listening to the quiet mind and the jubilant and beholden heart, we have returned home, a place that's been waiting for us, not some distant location, but a very intimate heartbeat of the universe right there inside each one of us. Notice what it feels like to have come home to yourself, to be holding the heart that has been holding you, to feel the love that is unbounded and yet extremely intimate. Perhaps all we're here to do on this planet is to glimpse this love that we are and to let it ripple out into the world and touch as many as come in contact with it, knowing that we are an instrument for the divine. And in order for this to make music, we have to let it play the music of love through us, as us, within us, and all around us. How sweet it is to arrive. Let's take a deep breath. Give a sigh for the divine. Ah, so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.